joining me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. And this is the ACIM podcast for the week of December 13th, 2021. And I'm delighted because I was able to catch up with Susan Dugan to join her for a conversation about chapter 15 in the ACIM text, The Holy Instant. And specifically today, we're going to be talking about section 8, which is the only real relationship. So I hope this is something that really appeals to you, and thanks for joining us today. Thanks for finding this in the archives of 12radio.com. Now, many of you, I know you have followed the show for a long time, so you know Susan Dugan. She is a Course in Miracles teacher and the author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness and living A Course in Miracles. So without any further ado, Susan, thank you very much for suggesting the topic today.
Well, thanks for having me, and I love this this chapter, and this section is a beautiful part of it. So,
well, and I was kind of surprised, actually, when you suggested this. So I did want to ask you why, because I follow your emails in terms of what you're doing with your group, you know, your Tuesday night group. And I thought, you're well beyond chapter 15, right?
Yes, but we're no longer moving. We finished moving linearly.
Okay.
Ever. through the text some time ago. And so after that, now I'm just picking. It's not really randomly. It may seem like that to others, but I'm just kind of going through and jumping around in the text, sometimes the manual, sometimes the workbook, but mostly the text.
Okay.
And so the only reason that we're focusing on chapter 15 right now is because this is sort of the Christmas season, and it is the chapter that is that talks about that uses the imagery of the holiday and the season to really speak about, as you were saying, the holy instant is the name of the section, and really kind of speak about that in terms of our relationships. What is a holy relationship? What is a special, it goes into very great depth and sometimes graphic and harrowing depth in this chapter on the special relationship and what that's really about, and how the course is really, the course's unique form of forgiveness that we're learning is really about transforming our relationships through this practice and process of a new kind of forgiveness in our relationships. And so that's what this particular section, I think, is really helpful to kind of clarify the, people's confusion. A lot of course students have a lot of confusion about what a holy relationship is.
Uh-huh.
And, I think we want to believe that, we try to drag it down to the level of the world, a level of our bodies, but the course is only always really speaking about us as minds, as a decision-making mind. From the course's perspective, the way that a relationship, a seeming relationship with another body in the world becomes holy is through our decision to choose a different teacher in the mind. We've already chosen the ego as our teacher, the teacher of specialness, the teacher of trying to always prove that I exist, but it's not my fault, to get rid of the guilt that I feel over the belief that my tiny mad idea of separation is real. The way that we act that out is through our special relationships, in which we try to, we project guilt onto each other, and we also try to get our needs met, to fill this loss and lack that we feel within over that mistaken belief that we did separate from God and no longer, we've sacrificed that love and now we have nothing.
Right.
So we're always trying to sort of greedily find what we perceive as empty within from the outside in another person, in another body, in another, often another substance, or money or success or something to make us feel better about ourselves. And so the holy relationship is really changing. is just a change of mind, a change of purpose, to say that, you know what, the way that I'm relating here, there has to be a better way. You know, there's something is wrong with the way I'm relating. I never feel really truly loved and loving, and I want to find a better way. I want to open to the possibility, to the presence of the healed perception in my mind, that memory of wholeness. Jesus, Holy Spirit, is the symbol used in the Course, and to make, you know, to learn now from this teacher, and to turn to this teacher in my darkness and my anger and anxiety and blame and judgment in my relationships, and to say, you know, I really want to see differently. I want to see myself differently. I want to see this person differently, and I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I chose this section, is really just, you know, so that we could talk about the holy relationship and what it really is. And, you know, when this the name of this section, which is section 8 in chapter 15, is the only real relationship. And, you know, what the only real relationship is, my choice as a decision-making mind to identify and choose that teacher within me that's real and that reflects the reality that I am still innocent, and so are you. You know,
right.
we are still really part of that undifferentiated, all-loving union with our Source that has never been interrupted. And, you know, we're trying to learn that one decision at a time, one forgiveness opportunity at a time. Usually we learn it and we turn to it when we're already upset and already feeling unfairly treated. And as you and I were talking at the beginning of this, we were talking about that sense of feeling that nobody gets me, you know,
right.
in my relationships, how we all feel secretly often, and sometimes we don't even admit it to ourselves, but we feel lonely even, you know, even within our relationships, and we feel lonely in groups of people, and we feel misunderstood and not heard and not seen and not respected and all of that. And of course, you know, the Course gives a long explanation for why this is, which I just touched on in, you know, this introduction. But all minds that seem to be fragments of the decision-making mind that seem to be represented in these personal bodies in our dream are all walking around with that same kind of hollow sense, that same sense of lesson 182 talks about, that, you know, that we're somehow an alien here and can't get our needs met. And so our plan to try to get our needs met from the outside in other bodies is what Ken called a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem, the non-existent problem of separation that didn't really happen. But it's maladaptive because it doesn't work. It doesn't really fill the lack, and it doesn't really get rid of the guilt. Only connecting with that real relationship in the mind, you know, choosing again, learning to choose a different teacher and give a different purpose to my life and my relationships as a classroom of forgiveness, will really begin to bring healing to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and something I read, let's see if I can get this straight, and I don't know that it came out of the text, or I'm not even sure it came out of the channeled materials at all. It may have been Ken's words, because I know I read it in one of his books, and yet the way he said it made me think it came out of the text. But anyway, he said, when we're able to ask for help, you know, to choose a teacher, that, you know, the inner teacher, then the room, he said, the room becomes a temple and the street becomes a stream of stars.
Oh, that's lovely. That's from his workshop. I think it's called The Stream of Stars.
Oh, really?
I think he has a workshop that has that title in it. But yes, you know, and of course those are symbols.
Yes, they are. But how wonderful!
It's a beautiful. It's a, well, because So our lives become a classroom, right? Are given meaning. Right now, you know, if we're choosing the ego, they really have no meaning whatsoever, because separation has no meaning. It was an impossible dream that mm-hmm. was over long ago. But I give it meaning by changing the purpose again, by reversing the direction from rooting myself more deeply in the dream to ascending up the ladder that separation seemed to lead me down by making the purpose a classroom of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. You know, so that I can awaken from the dream.
Right.
And that's a very gradual process. Our fear is too great to go quickly through this, which much to the ego, you know, our spiritual ego's frustration at
times. Because there are times I'm like, yeah, just bring it on, hon.
What's this mistake? Why am I going through this again? But, you know, it's always everything that we're experiencing, we're learning is an outside picture of our inner condition. So if I'm feeling, you know, frustrated by my spiritual path or anything else, it's always telling me that I first made a decision to choose the ego in the mind and to really condemn myself. And that's always what I'm projecting out. I'm always condemning myself over that secret belief that I'm guilty of separating from God. But I always see it outside, project it outside myself, and then see it as an incoming problem, an incoming attack, you know, you're not getting me.
Right.
You're not supporting me. The reason I can't be happy right now, or the reason I can't blank, I can't move forward with this project, I can't make plans, I can't find joy and peace, is because of blank, of what you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's always about something or someone or some situation that is causing me to be anxious, to be upset, to be angry, to be, you know, feeling unsafe, whatever.
Absolutely.
So should we read a little bit?
Yeah, let's read some. Do you want to start?
Sure. So he starts out by saying, the holy instant does not replace the need for learning, for the Holy Spirit must not leave you as your teacher until the holy instant has extended far beyond time. So the holy instant is in the Course, is just that moment outside of time and space when we join Jesus, Holy Spirit, that healed perception, that, you know, all-loving, innocent presence, memory of wholeness in the mind. We join with that vision and awareness, and for a moment we share it. You know, we become aware of it, and the all that neediness of me, all of that guilt, completely recedes. It disappears for that moment, right? So we have. So you know, he's saying that the holy instant does not replace the need for learning. For it's still part of a process until the holy instant has extended far beyond time, right? So we have many holy instants until there's no more guilt left. This is how, you know, that shift in perception, our willingness to change our mind, is the forgiveness that the Course talks about, that undoes the guilt that is keeping, you know, keeps the world in my mind spinning as an outside picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so gradually that is dissolved, but we need to be taught until that guilt is gone, and then there's no more need for a teacher. There's no more need for a holy instant. So he goes on to say, for a teaching assignment such as this, he must use everything in this world for your release. So he's teaching us to use everything that we made up in our script, in our, you know, as our curriculum, to learn to apply this to everything that upsets me. And to, you know, we're training ourselves to, every single time we become anything but peaceful, you know, anxious, depressed, angry, whatever, to that should be our trigger, that to remind ourselves that it's not for the reason I think. It's really not about this other person. It's really not about this situation. However awful it may seem in form, that's really not the cause. The truth is that nothing outside my mind can take my peace away. And, you know, we need help to see that truth. So then the second step of forgiveness is I could see peace instead of this. Help me see peace instead of this. You know, just turning to our right mind, to Jesus, Holy Spirit, and asking to share that vision. So the Holy Spirit, he goes on to say in sentence 3, he must side with every sign or token of your willingness to learn of him what the truth must be. He is swift to utilize whatever you offer him on behalf of this. His concern and care for you are limitless. In the face of your fear of forgiveness, which he perceives as clearly as he knows forgiveness is release, he will teach you to remember that forgiveness is not loss, but your salvation. So Jesus is always saying to us, you know, I'm not judging you. I know you're fearful of this, and I'll wait as long as you need to, but you'll feel better if you choose. Right? And I promise you that love, you know, the love and peace that you seek in the wrong place is waiting for you when you're willing to choose. Right? Mm-hmm. And then he says, and that incomplete forgiveness in which you recognize that there is nothing to forgive, you are absolved completely. So this is a process. We recognize it each time, you know, we're invited to recognize it each time we become upset. But we also must learn to generalize it to everyone and everything. And that's and how do we do that? Ken always used to say, practice, 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 right? Mm-hmm. We do it, we just keep, again, it's a mind training. It's working with that practice. And you know, we will become afraid. We will become resistant at times. There will be times when it seems like peace does not return to us. But that's, you know, that's the development of trust. We're learning and reassured through those, you know, little moments when we do make the shift, that there is something, there is this loving presence and innocence that includes everyone waiting for me when my fear subsides enough to join with it. And that motivates us, because now we have the contrast of the hell we're in when we're resistant.
Yeah.
versus the complete comfort and gratitude and relief of the being relieved of the burden of this reactive personal self, which is just so tiring at times.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to go back to your mentioning workbook lessons 5 and 34, which is right. I'm never upset for the reason I think, number 5, and 34, I could see peace instead of this. And something right. I read just recently, and of course we know Ken just goes back to those over and over and over.
Yes.
He literally went so far as to say, those are the only two you need. Those are the only
right.
two workbook lessons you need. You know, right. pay attention to your feelings. What's going on? You're never upset for the reason you think, and you could see peace instead of this.
Yep.
It's such, you know, because sometimes we want to make things so complicated. And of course, yep. one of the things we want to believe too is, oh, A Course in Miracles, it's just too hard, it's too complicated, there's too many moving pieces. And it's like, no, it's not really. There's lots of different, I think, explanations or ways of looking at it. But it always comes down to that. You're never upset for the reason you think, and you could see peace instead of this. I could
yep.
see peace. It's a choice.
Right. And more we have the experience that I have seen peace instead of this. You know, those are what the Holy Instant offers.
Uh-huh.
I do have experience now when I do join with that healed perception. And, you know, I see that you know, I may have been extremely angry and upset with someone, and yet I, in one of my special relationships, that's especially where we, you know, the people that are closest to us with whom we interact the most and have some, you know, often share some sort of, you know, I'm talking about spouses and sisters and brothers and parents and children and you know, really, really lifelong friends and things like that, right? And you know, we have those times where we really have a shift, and we recognize that everybody here, you know, they're fighting the same hard battle that I am. They're just as scared as I am. They might be acting out in a different way, but they're as scared as I am, and they're acting out for the very same reason that I am, and that is the belief that we're separate and we can never find our way home, and we're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're still loved and loving, and we all are going to make it home together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, one thing that I think is becoming so much more apparent to me is that I guess I pride myself on being logical or figuring things out or having it make mental sense. And I think I'm finally getting that the world is totally illogical and totally chaotic. And therefore, like, for instance, I think, you know, at first in studying this or, you know, just approaching it a lot is thinking that, okay, yeah, eventually I am going to feel peace because I'm going to understand what this was about. And now it's sort of like, no, that rarely becomes a component of getting over something or feeling peaceful. It's not because all of a sudden I understand it or it makes sense. It doesn't, and it's not ever going to. And that's what's interesting to me is once I can stop and say, I'm never upset for the reason I think, and mm-hmm. I truly do need a new perspective, the new perspective does come. It does happen.
It does.
But
it does.
Not because all of a sudden Jesus or somebody else explains to me exactly what happened.
No.
And no. That's been kind of a revelation. Like, you know what? No. You're never going to understand why somebody said or did or whatever. You don't have your understanding does not
matter.
Contribute. That's, yeah.
Right. And you remember, you know, the Course says in the workbook, forgiveness is still and quietly does nothing.
Yeah.
It merely looks and waits and judges not. So that presence of love in our mind is just there all the time. We block out our awareness of it. But, you know, what it requires is to admit that we don't know. We mm-hmm. don't know what would help. We don't know what the cause it. You know, we've forgotten the cause. We've forgotten. And that, you know, that saying maybe, you know, basically, I'm not upset for the reason I think is just saying I'm wrong.
Yes.
Right. I'm wrong about why I'm upset. And I need help to find peace, the peace that's there.
Right. And no amount of studying the insane world is going to bring you the clarity or the peace that we're looking for.
Studying the insane world will just root you more deeply.
Yeah, in the world.
In defending the insanity and trying to make it work. And I mean, that is not to say that we don't, you know, like that if you're someone who's a social scientist or, you know, a scientist of any kind, or, I mean, we're all studying the world to some extent. It's not talking about that in form, but again, it's the meaning that we give it. There's no meaning that will lead us to peace in the world. There's no meaning. And yes, it is. I mean, it's logical within its own insanity. It adds up within its own insanity, but it's insane, all of it. And, you know, when you're talking about the chaos, well, you know, the first obstacle to peace is the desire to get rid of it,
mm-hmm.
to get rid of peace. Is everybody here is saying that they want peace, but living like they want to topple it, that they really want everything to be their way, you know?
Right.
Everyone's trying to prove that they are the, you know, I really do exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. It's everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
And so each part of the decision-making mind that seems to be having their own dream is the center of their universe and believes that. I mean, no wonder we can't even get, you know, any consensus in the world. We can't even get it in a relationship between two people usually.
Right. So, well, and in fact, something I heard in a workshop of Ken's.
A dog person, right?
Right. Something I heard recently of Ken's, and I'm really hanging on to this because not only did it sound funny, which humor always helps me remember things,
yeah.
But it's also just, I catch myself and I go, okay, what stage are you in here? And that is, he was talking about closet lawyers. And I think actually, in truth, I think he was saying something about this in a book I was reading, and then I heard it in a totally different workshop. So I'm probably putting the two ideas together. But he talks about closet lawyers. And he said, you know, we literally, first what we do in our minds is we make up a story about people. So there again, you offended me, you said this, you did that, you offended me. So I make up a story about you to start with. Then right. I build my case against you. You know, yes. And I'll tell you, Susan, I so identify with that. Because then it's like, you know what, this is the fourth time that Susan said that to me. And do you remember when she, when she also did this and this and this and this. So this is a pattern here. So I build my case. And then I get my allies to agree with me that I'm right about Susan. And so when I look at things in those three steps, I literally catch myself and go, yep, you're building a case all right, you know? Or, you want to call somebody up and you want to share the story because you're networking, you're getting your allies together to corroborate your story. And, I mean, just that one concept has really, you know, at least it shed some light and brought a little bit of a smile to my face this week. As I catch myself in all three of those stages.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We definitely are always making our case. You know, the ego's body of evidence is always being documented, right?
Yes.
And that's the whole idea is you know, to so that at the end, I mean, death is built into this alternate reality that we made too. There's punishment coming at the end for everyone. But you know, the way that we, the ego's plan, if we choose to join it, is that at the end of our lives, you know, we'll have a whole ledger of people that did us wrong worse than we did them wrong. And we can show that to God, and he'll show mercy on us, and they'll burn in hell.
Right.
It's really insane.
Well, it is. I mean, that's it. When you literally see it all laid out like that, you go, oh, my God. Where did this? It's almost like, you know, a bad adolescent story.
Right.
Right? Well, should I read the second paragraph? Or were you going to say something else?
No, please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so the second paragraph is, hear him gladly and learn of him that you have need of no special relationships at all. You but seek in them what you have thrown away. And through them, you will never learn the value of what you have cast aside, but still desire with all your heart. Let us join together in making the holy instant all that there is, by desiring that it be all that there is. God's Son has such great need of your willingness to strive for this that you cannot conceive of need so great. Behold the only need that God and his Son share, and will to meet people together. You are not alone in this. The will of your creations calls to you to share your will with them. Turn then in peace from guilt to God and them.
I mean, the need of every heart, the you know, is forgiveness. The whole, it says in the workbook, and you know, that we all share the same need.
Mm-hmm.
We're all suffering from the same problem, from the same mistaken belief.
Well, and you know what gets me about this is that kind of the beginning, you're always seeking in these external relationships what you just threw aside. You just cast it out. And now you're going all over looking for it.
Right. And what we believe we cast out is the love of God.
Right.
Real love. Yeah.
Yeah, real love. So we cast it aside, and then we're just vainly looking over and over and over and over for
substitutes.
It. In special relationships, you know, with people, with food, with cars, with whatever.
Right, and that's what, I mean, that's really the definition of special relationships, is substitutes for the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And also, you know, as we know, in the special relationship bargain, so there we try to get, you know, meet up with people and form long-term relationships to try to get our needs met through bargaining, right, and compromise, which we know how well all of that goes. And then, but the secret agenda is also to blame them for letting us down. You know, that's how we feel like that we position ourselves as the less guilty one in our you know, the case that we're making, our covert lawyering.
Yes.
To build our case so that at the end, you know, we're the less guilty ones, right? And all along, we're the less guilty ones. That's behind why we go to other people and talk about it. That's behind why we try to, you know, find allies to turn against them and all of this, all of that we do.
Yes.
Right. And often, you know, that's kind of considered kind of normal behavior.
Oh, totally normal behavior.
You know, I mean, even really good marriages, that's what goes on. So, what's that about? You know, and Jesus is always saying, well, you know, how's that working out for you? Right.
Right.
And it is. You know, it's really the cause of my suffering. And we have to begin to see that. We have to begin to take responsibility and stop playing the game that we're the innocent victims of the world we see, to at least look at it differently, to at least, you know, again, just take those two basic steps of forgiveness. The Holy Spirit does the rest for us. Right? Jesus does, you know, that loving presence in our mind, it's already healed. It's waiting with the healing. And
yes.
The innocence that has not changed. So, you know, our job is only to catch ourselves over and over and be honest with ourselves and at least raise the possibility that I'm wrong about why I'm upset. And that I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to join with the peace in me.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we leave this paragraph, and maybe this will take us too far off, I don't know, but I would just like to hear your opinion about the concept of your creations, because that is an idea that kind of throws me whenever I see it in A Course in Miracles. You know, and in this sentence it says, the will of your creations calls to you to share your will with them. What
right.
What
it,
are your creations?
You know what? I have Ken's glossary right here.
Uh-huh.
So we can look it up, but I think of it as just the thoughts of God, you know, the creations. There is no real creation here on earth.
Right.
So it's you can kind of think of it sort of as the thoughts of God. But
okay.
Let me look up the actual definition, because I've got it right here. We might as well get it right.
You know what? I appreciate your doing that, because like I said, it always throws me. And
remember, everything is symbolic here and not and metaphorical. It's not. It doesn't refer to anything in form.
Right.
So that I can say for sure. But let's see.
Well, okay. And you know, the other thing that is important is it does make a distinction in A Course in Miracles between on Earth we make, whereas the infinite creates. So like you say, we're not really creating anything within
right.
the dream. The dream is about making, but it's not about true creation.
No, it's making up.
Right, right. And so that's why when I hear
yeah.
see a sentence like this, I'm like, okay,
right.
Now
so
what do I do with
this? It's real or informed. So creations, he says, the extensions of our spirit, the effects of our creating, analogous to the creation when God created his son by extending himself. As extensions of Christ, our creations are part of the second person of the Trinity. Creation is ongoing in heaven beyond time and space and independent of the son's lack of awareness of it in this world. So basically, we're still part of, it kind of refers back to level one, that we're still part of that continuous extension of God's love that is uninterrupted, that's going on even as we, you know, even as we're completely unaware of it,
mm-hmm.
right? So, so the will of your creations calls to you. You know, that extension of God's love is calling to us from beyond the dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
To share your will with them. And the way we share our will with them is to change our mind, to practice forgiveness. I mean, forgiveness is the only earthly form of God's love.
Right.
Right.
Well, I guess that makes sense if you're thinking of it like, in fact, somebody asked me about this week. They said, you know, we always say we're one. But we're not. How can
no,
we be?
And, there's no oneness in the dream. That's right.
No. And you know, I said, yeah, and you're right. We're in individual bodies. And And yet we do know on some spiritual level that we're all connected. And so in a sense, these creations calling to you is maybe some kind of an awareness that that's it. I'm part of the one. I'm part of,
you know,
or like what sometimes people say, the Christ mind or something like that. I am part of the one. They're not individual manifestations on earth.
There's nothing. It's an undifferentiated union. So they're,
it's not, wrap your mind around that, Susan.
I think it falls under the senseless musings of what we can't understand, right?
Okay, all right.
No, seriously, I don't think that we can really understand what that means. But I would say that, you know, we don't understand what oneness means on this level. But the, again, it's all about forgiveness. Forgiveness is what, practicing forgiveness is what leads us into that holy instant in which we see that we're the same, which we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Sameness, S-A-M-E-N-E-S-S, is the earthly form of oneness.
Right. Okay. Right. All right. That helps. Thank you for taking the time to look that up.
Sure. No, it's always good to, but you know, it's one of those ones that's kind of squirrely. It's kind of like the rays that, you know, it's just we can't really fully understand it, but it's hearkening back to that, to our true nature, to the mm-hmm. extent, the ongoing love of God.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so, as you said, it really will take us down a rabbit hole.
Yes.
And it has taken me down a rabbit hole.
And we love to jump into rabbit holes because right. we'd rather do that than forgive.
Well, yeah, because I'd rather figure this out, you know, make it logical, think I'm smart enough to do that.
All right.
All right. So paragraph three.
Paragraph three. This is my favorite paragraph, I think. Relate only with what will never leave you and what you can never leave. The loneliness of God's Son is the loneliness of his Father. Refuse not the awareness of your completion and seek not to restore it to yourself. Fear not to give redemption over to your Redeemer's love. He will not fail you, for he comes from one who cannot fail. Accept your sense of failure as nothing more than a mistake in who you are. For the holy host of God is beyond failure, and nothing that he wills can be denied. You are forever in a relationship so holy that it calls to everyone to escape from loneliness and join you in your love. And where you are must everyone seek and find you there.
That is lovely.
Isn't that beautiful? And that's that quiet center in the mind, in that whole, you know, when we join Jesus in that healed awareness of all-encompassing love and innocence, then, you know, everyone, that's the correction. That's our sameness. That's the result of forgiveness. Right? We are happily wrong, and we have that complete sigh of relief and release and gratitude that, oh, I was wrong. No one's guilty. I'm not guilty. You know?
Yeah, what a relief.
Yeah, what a relief. And they're not guilty, and we recognize that's a huge relief too.
Yeah.
Very often when we have that kind of shift, we don't even really, it's almost like those threads of our case, of the ego's, you know, lawyering,
mm-hmm.
we can't, they don't add up anymore. You know, we can't even grasp them. It's almost like they were just kind of wiped from our memory. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, because they don't have any meaning. It's just, all we see is that we're fighting the same hard battle. You know, all that flows from that would be compassion and kindness.
Yes. Well, and I love the use of the word loneliness here, because as you said before we started really doing the show today, we were talking about loneliness. And I particularly was saying, you know, even though I've lived alone for a long time and I tend to be a loner, in fact, I describe myself that way, I don't feel lonely when I'm alone. I feel lonely when I'm with other people who feel so different than me. And obviously that's my issue of separating and believing we're not all the same. But that's when I feel lonely, when I feel like it's like I'm a stranger in a strange land. I'm an alien. That's where loneliness comes in. And that has been a real issue in the last couple months, I think, not only for me, but just even in the clients I talk to or the situations that I hear, you know, even going to gatherings or something, people are talking about loneliness.
Right.
And so
right.
It's really resonating with me right now. And so this is so wonderful, just like refuse not the awareness of your completion and seek not to restore it to yourself.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know, you are part of a relationship, you know, now I'm paraphrasing, but you're part of a relationship so holy that it calls to everyone to escape from loneliness and join you in that love.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's,
you know. That's the real relationship. That's what we're all longing for, and that's where and with whom we join, with what we join, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because in that, you know, that's lesson 182, that, you know, that everybody's walking around as everybody feels like a frightened alien child who is not welcome home, doesn't know, is lost in this world, is lonely beyond belief, is homeless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is lonely, you know, everybody's our insistence on differences. And that's why what increases, we're trying to fill that loneliness and you know, correct it with other bodies that are just as lonely as we are.
Yeah.
Right? It can't work. It's just an outside picture of that inner condition. And so, you know, when we really go within and truly unite with that presence, make that our intention for all of our relationships, then the loneliness is solved.
Yeah. You know? Well, and you know, I had a really interesting situation this week. You would think I have these situations all the time, but I'm ashamed to say I don't. And that is where I was with somebody who was very distraught and upset. And you know, once again, I've got this oldest daughter feeling of, you know, yeah, well, I come to the rescue of people, you know, I'm the oldest of many children. And
right.
And I just, I kind of, you know, didn't do it physically, but in my mind, I was just throwing up my hands going, I don't have the faintest idea what to say to this person. I don't have the faintest idea how to make this better. I am totally clueless. And in that, you know, kind of dialogue in my head, I literally did just say, Jesus, you're going to have to do something here. And I know he doesn't do anything in the world, but it was the idea of none of my intelligence, none of my supposed experience or anything else means jack shit. Excuse my French.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be guided in this situation. I just need to be an open channel because I have no idea what to do. And there was like a lot of moments of just silence and quiet. And then somehow there was an opening. And it was interesting because to me, the person turned the situation around themselves because mm-hmm. they started talking about something. And then as they kind of geared into that and felt, I think what they felt for me was acceptance, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden they were talking themselves out of how lonely and distraught they felt.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a wonderful lesson because, you know, when we talk about just removing the obstacles to love.
Yes.
You know, part of my obstacle is always thinking that I'm going to have the right thing to say to somebody.
Right.
And yet the right thing, I had no idea what the right thing was. And so when I was able to, in a sense, just call in the cavalry, you know,
yep.
and just say, I don't know. But I know that this person is in a very bad space and feels totally lonely, and I can feel that in my own heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I didn't say it that way, like we're the same, but I think I knew we were the same.
Right.
And that allowed the energy to just shift and change, and literally for the channel between us to be open to something other than my telling her how to get out of this space.
Right. I mean, that's a perfect example, really, I think, of forgiveness in that you recognized that, you know, you're willing to get your ego out of the way.
Yeah.
You were, and to be wrong.
Yeah.
You didn't have it. You couldn't solve this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a form of I don't know. I don't know what the answer is here. And you asked for, you know, you said, I want peace. I want to get out of the way and let you, you know, bring peace to us. And I think it's interesting that, you know, it was very quiet.
Yeah.
And that is the, you know, even if you were speaking and if something was flowing through you, it would be a very quiet and non, you know, there'd be no judgment, there'd be no expectation for anyone to agree with you. And it sounds like the person, you know, minds are joined, and the person also felt cradled and in that love, loving presence in both all of our minds. We all have shared that right mind and Holy Spirit, Jesus, and was, you know, found loving thoughts coming to them. So
yeah. It was for me, it was very healing, but it was also very enlightening.
Yes.
That, you know, and I do feel like it, even if there was a moment, there really was a holy instant. There was a moment,
yes,
of my really just saying, I have no idea. I am,
yes,
so clueless. And,
yes,
yet I want this, you know, I want something to come here. I want something else. I want, you know, I want to know what it feels like to love this other person and to accept them and not be judgmental.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even though those weren't all the words, it was more like I said, it was like I just shut my mouth. Like, you know, I don't know what to say, and
yep,
I just shut my mouth.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, really, and you know, and sometimes we instantly have an experience like that. Sometimes it takes a while, but there's a, you know, if we ask with sincerity, there will always be a shift at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's,
yeah,
beautiful.
Well, and you know what was enlightening for me too, is because, I mean, I try not to do this, but like I said, it's hard to move out of that ego space of, oh, you know what to tell them, you know how to fix this, and I didn't fix it. I didn't fix it at all.
No.
When the person was allowed to, in a sense, work through what was going on and feel totally accepted and totally safe, they figured it out. They,
yes,
came up with what was, you know, they felt better. They somehow brought it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost, you know, like we think about this too with A Course in Miracles, at least I do, being the midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to get out of the way. It's not your baby, you know, or, you know, you didn't do this, but you can assist, or you can watch, or you can observe, but you don't get to take responsibility.
No, and that's true for ourselves too. So when we are, you know, feeling that we know something, what's right for ourselves, or
mm-hmm,
for a problem, it's the same process. Is just getting the ego out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's that first step of forgiveness is always begins with I don't know here. I need help.
Yeah.
And you know, that's why I love the idea of being happily wrong.
Yeah, I like that phrase, happily,
you know,
wrong.
Because it's really, you know, that is honestly the gratitude that comes to you, I think, in the holy instant is exactly that. It's not this big, you know, Disney moment with or operatic, you know, choir of angels or something. It's just that huge sense of release and relief and gratitude that, oh, I'm wrong about this. You know, I don't have to do. It's okay. It's all okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, thank you for letting me share that.
No, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah. Now, I know there was another paragraph you wanted to read.
Yeah. Do we want to close with this?
Yeah.
This one? Okay. It's paragraph 6.
Uh-huh.
And I'll just read it.
It's, okay.
In the Holy Spirit alone lies the awareness of what God cannot know and what you do not understand. It is His holy function to accept them both, and by removing every element of disagreement, to join them into one. He will do this because it is His function. Leave then what seems to you to be impossible to Him who knows it must be possible, because it is the will of God. And let him whose teaching is only of God teach you the only meaning of relationships. For God created the only relationship that has meaning, and that is his relationship with you.
Hence the title of this section.
Yes, and I think that's actually beautiful after that example that you just shared. This really sums up that idea that his function to accept them both, and by removing every element of disagreement to join them into one, he will do this because it is his function. Leave then what seems to you to be impossible to him who knows it must be possible because it is the will of God. Get out of the way.
Yeah.
Right? That's our only job.
Yep.
It's a really hard one, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely
is. But it works.
Yep.
Yeah.
Once again, goes back to, lesson 5.
Yep. Yep.
Might as well just say, I have no idea.
I'm never upset
for the reason I think, because I have no idea what's really going on.
Yeah. I need to remember that more for sure.
Yep. All right. Well, as we close this particular broadcast, do you have any announcements that you'd like to make or anything that you'd like to bring to people's attention?
Not really, except I just read it briefly, but it sounds like the Foundation for A Course in Miracles sent out an announcement that they have revamped their whole website and online presence. So I encourage people to go look at that. I know that Jeff Siebert is doing new, I think it's called Encounters with Ken, so a new Wednesday class in which there will be listening to workshops and seminars of Ken's, and then followed by a commentary, question and answer with Jeff Siebert, and some way that it's interactive with the audience. And I think that's all on their streaming website. But I would encourage people, I'm going to go and check it out. And I would encourage, there is a wonderful new Academy class, and those are the classes that Ken used to do that were week long, that he would do first at Roscoe and then at Temecula. And this one is called Weeding Your Garden. And I actually attended this one. It was the year that it must have been 2013. It was right around there. And it was one that I remember as being incredibly powerful. So I just bought it. And I would encourage people that are serious students of Ken's, serious in the best possible way, meaning committed, not necessarily too serious. But I think that it's a wonderful, I just remember it being just incredibly powerful. And so you might want to check out whether you want to purchase that too.
Okay. Well, and thank you for that. And yes, I just purchased that too.
Okay.
Because I saw their announcement come out, and especially when something is new, then I know that I don't already have it in my library. So I have not listened to it, but I will after the first of the year, because in that same announcement, they had something else that had sort of a holiday Christmas theme. And so I also purchased that one, and I'm listening to that one right now. In fact, I think that's where I got the phrase about the closet lawyer.
Oh, I love it.
In fact, I think it's the one that's called Listening with the Angels or something like that.
Watching with Angels.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for that, Susan. And also thanks for mentioning the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, because that one is pivotal in my life. And that's where we get a lot of the materials that we listen to excerpts of those workshops here on 1-2 Radio and the ACIM show. So, Susan, thank you so much for sharing this hour for me and for helping me put this together. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Me too. Thanks, CA.
Okay, and everybody who has found this on 12radio.com, thank you so much. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with CA Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality.